Check out my newly renamed podcast, Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown, where we'll discuss the ongoing conflict with Iran and its implications for our economy, security, and upcoming elections. Hope to see you there. Democracy on Fire on United America Network.
Welcome to Hot Spots on the United America Network. From the shifting landscapes of politics and culture to the urgent challenges facing our planet and our communities, this is where the conversations that matter most come alive. With her experience as a journalist, legislator, and activist, Kay Brown brings sharp insight, uplifting perspective, and unflinching courage to the issues shaping our future. Get ready for candid conversations, bold ideas, and the pushback our times demand. Now, here's Kay.
Hello. I'm glad you're here. I hope you're processing the news of the day in a positive way, whatever that means for you. I'm Kay Brown, your host of Hotspots. The topic on many minds is the political debacle unfolding right here around us, which, I say with regret, is eerily like George Orwell's novel 1984 come to life. Published in 1949, it foreshadowed many of the things happening now. 1984 is a dystopian science fiction narrative set in a totalitarian society that's under constant surveillance, where the government, led by the party and its leader, Big Brother, exerts oppressive control over every aspect of life. It predicts totalitarianism, surveillance, censorship, and the manipulation of truth and language. Orwell's portrayal of a society where individualism and independent thinking are punished has made the term Orwellian synonymous with oppressive governmental action and practices. The book is a cautionary tale about the danger of losing personal freedom and the power of propaganda. It remains relevant now as a touchstone for discussions about privacy, state power, and civil liberties. In this conversation today, we're going to continue exploring the ramifications of Christian nationalism, which is the through line that connects the authoritarian takeover of our government and the assaults we're seeing on freedom of speech, democracy, the rule of law, and our personal freedoms. My guest is Sarah Petrovich, a former homeschooled evangelical. She graduated valedictorian from Patrick Henry College in 2006, and she has a master's degree in marriage and family therapy. You can follow Sarah on Instagram, TikTok, and Substack, where she speaks and writes about reclaiming her story after Christian nationalism. Welcome, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah, you describe yourself as a deserter from the Christian Nationalist Army. What is the Christian Nationalist Army, and why did you desert from it?
So the Christian Nationalist Army is a fictional term or something very real, which is a decades-long effort by conservative evangelical leaders to amass political power. And I use the term army partly because evangelicals are obsessed with military language, but also to describe the kids who were part of this movement, because I grew up as a homeschool kid in Fresno, California. And essentially, these homeschool kids were like foot soldiers for the religious right, because they could indoctrinate us with a specific type of religious ideology and then kind of just use us to further their cause. So I was told that I was part of a generation that was going to take back the culture for Christ. And then the reason I deserted, there's predominantly two big reasons. The first was the rise of Donald Trump in 2015. He was counter to all of the things that I had been taught as a Christian kid. And it was that hypocrisy that drove me away. And then the other big thing was becoming a mom. I just could not imagine raising my own kids in the restrictive, suffocating environment that I was raised in.
Tell me about the role of Patrick Henry University in building this Christian Nationalist Army.
Yes. So Patrick Henry College was started by a man named Mike Ferris. And you'll find with a lot of things in Christian nationalism and in the religious right, they're all connected. All of the different figures and institutions and churches are supporting each other and supporting their own propaganda. So Mike Ferris started an organization called Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And it was responsible for making homeschooling legal in the United States, which I don't have a problem with. But the other thing it did is it fought any laws which would require governmental oversight of homeschooling. And then after doing that, Mike Ferris eventually in 2000 started Patrick Henry College, and it almost has entirely been made up of homeschooled kids. So they were coming into this college already indoctrinated with this specific type of religious ideology. And you could almost think of Patrick Henry as like the finishing school, kind of giving them the last touches to prepare them to have prominent places in culture and politics. And the significant thing about PHC is that it's only an hour from Washington, D.C. So a lot of these government majors required internships in D.C. to graduate. And then that was like a step to getting a job after graduation.
So are there a lot of graduates serving in our government now?
There are, especially for the size of Patrick Henry. In 25 years, it's only produced about 1,200 alumni, but there have been at least 25 Patrick Henry students who have been interns or employees in the White House, not under Obama, but under Bush and under Trump. So the most famous PhD graduate is Alyssa Farah Griffin. She was, I think, a director of strategic communications for Trump in 2020, and she's now a co-host on The View.
What are some of the worst things about Christian nationalism, how it affects people's lives?
Actually, what you were saying about the novel 1984 really resonates with me. Just how any individualism is crushed. If you look at my experience and my family growing up, there are all of these arbitrary rules, which the people in charge will say are from the Bible, but even Christian nationalists don't agree with each other about what the Bible says you should do and be. But it's this top-down control. It's all about hierarchy, and men are at the top. So if you're not a straight white man, then Christian nationalism is particularly harmful for you.
So do you think it's ascending now in our country? Is it getting more prominent because of Trump and the people that he's putting in charge of the government?
Absolutely. I mean, it's even terrifying to me. Part of me growing up, like the narrative that I was told as a kid, we were victims, like people were out to get us and destroy our lifestyle. I never imagined as a kid that we would ever be ascendant. My parents told me I might be martyred for my faith, which is just kind of crazy to think about. But I was terrified as a kid that I wouldn't live to see adulthood because I'd be martyred in America just for being a Christian. And now we see like a complete flip. I would say probably the best example of Christian nationalism winning is Pete Hegseth, because he's now the Secretary of War and he has this position of influence in government. He's part of the Communion of Reformed Evangelical Churches. And that's the interesting thing about Christian nationalism. It's less about a specific issue or policy proposal, and it's more about the quote-unquote right people being in charge, the true Christian.
And Hegseth is in that category. He's a proponent of Christian nationalism, right?
Yes.
And is trying to implement those policies now in the military by excluding trans people and demoting women and taking other actions, challenging people's right to get health care. So it's very troubling. And I saw that he had reposted these two pastors who were carrying on in loud terms about denying women the right to vote. I mean, it seems like he really wants to go backwards from where our country has been.
It's actually a perfect way to put it. I feel like my family and my community intentionally wound back the clock. So I love to read, but my favorite genre is actually romance novels. And it's so strange because when I read historical romance, I feel like I'm reading about my life. I'm reading about Victoria era England. And it's like, oh no, she kissed him. Now they'll have to get married. And, oh, she can't marry him. Her parents don't approve. That's what my life was like. That's what it's like as a woman under Christian nationalism.
Has it changed since you left? Or how has it changed since you left?
It has only gotten scarier and more extreme. I saw this meme recently, and I'll probably mess it up, but someone was basically saying that the number of ignorant, kind-hearted, evangelical Republicans has shrunk significantly. Like, I feel like back then, I was very misguided. I feel like I had a good heart, but I had a lot of bad beliefs and I was hurting people. Whereas now I feel like people are more aware of just how ugly the movement is, and they're just deny, 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 defend, defend, defend. And I've just seen it get incredibly nasty.
Why did you decide to speak out, and what motivated you to do that?
It's so funny, Kay, because I was one of the least political kids at Patrick Henry. I was a literature major. I love Louisa May Alcott. I was not out campaigning and going to marches and protest. But I'm speaking out now predominantly because I can't tell you how scary it is to claw my way out of this restricted patriarchal community and then to see the government follow that same far-right political blueprint. Like, really, all I want is to be able to live my life in peace, to have my queer friends have civil liberties, to have women be able to make decisions about their own bodies. And so I felt like I had to speak up. I had to do something.
How can people who want to do something push back effectively? Seems like speaking out is one thing you can do, one thing you are doing. Thank you for doing that. As you look around and assess the situation that we're confronting here, what advice do you have for friends, family, neighbors? How are you getting people involved?
It's interesting that you end by saying, how are you getting people involved? Because I feel like that's my strength. I love organizing people. I love introducing some people to other people. That's important to me because there's so much isolation in the world that I come from. And then when you leave it, you're shunned by so many people that you used to be friends with, or you don't want to hang out with them because their speech is so hateful. And so I do a lot to try to connect people and help them not feel so alone. But I do have a lot of ideas for how people can push back against Christian nationalism. One is to educate yourself. I highly recommend the book Jesus and John Wayne by Kristen Cobes Dumé. It is incredible. You can also read The Memoirs of Survivors, Rift by Kate West, and A Well-Trained Wife by Tia Levings. It's actually very interesting. Tia Levings was from the same group of churches that Pete Hegseth belongs to. So I think her memoir is particularly relevant right now. Also, I think practicing tolerance is very important. Not using their playbook and shutting down dialogue. It's so easy to want to do what they're doing. And I would just encourage everyone to do the opposite. But one thing I've learned, because I have so many old friends, so many family members who are Christian nationalists or are a part of that camp. And so one rule I found for knowing where to spend my time and whether it's worth to continue talking to someone is how open they are to new information coming in. So I'd say it doesn't matter how extreme their beliefs are. If they're just open to you giving them a piece of information and actually considering that, then you can talk to them. But if they immediately discount it, then move on to the next person. And then I guess the last thing I would say is mentoring the next generation, especially if you have kids. I think a lot about my teenage son. He is the sweetest, smartest kid, but he could be susceptible to online radicalization. So I think a lot about keeping up an ongoing line of communication with him. I try to be an example of a strong woman who loves him so that I'm also a feminist and I believe that he is an inherently good person. I want him to respect the rights of women and also to feel respected as a young man.
I really appreciate your insights, Sarah, and what you've been through and how you've survived that and come out with a different perspective that you're now willing to share. It's so important. What's at stake? It's just so important. It's about time for us to wrap this up. But in this podcast series, we're working on raising awareness about the situations around us that need attention and addressing the question, what can we do about any of this? Which is what I get asked a lot. But I think it, like you said, it begins with awareness. It begins with education. When people understand something, they're motivated to take action. And getting out of this mess takes a movement to support that action. We're helping build the movement, and we invite you to join the movement with us on United America Network. We need you. Speak up, stand up, show up. This is what democracy sounds and looks like. I hope to connect with you again soon here on Hotspots with Kay Brown, UnitedAmericaNetwork.com.
You've been listening to Hotspots with Kay Brown, where tough issues meet thoughtful conversation. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and join us again as we spotlight the struggles, solutions, and stories that fuel resilience and change. Until next time, keep your fire burning. Hotspots is a production of the United America Network and is available on most major podcast platforms, as well as from UnitedAmericaNetwork.com. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
If you've had enough and want to wake up our recalcitrant Congress, join me on Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown for the top 23 reasons we need regime change now. Hope to see you there, Democracy on Fire, on United America Network.